Okay, at this time, I would like to welcome our speaker this evening. His name is Elijah. He is here from Miracle on Main Street, and we thank you for taking your time to do the service work to carry the message. At this time, I'd like to introduce Elijah. Come on up, sir.
Hello, family. My name is Elijah, and I am an alcoholic. I was telling somebody earlier that I've never refused anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Anytime I'm asked to do something, I do it. And it has been really rewarding. My sobriety date is Christmas Day, 1981. Yeah. I wasn't introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had an alcohol problem. I had a back problem. Police was on my back. The boss was on my back. And I worked for an airline at the time, and I was a pharmaceutical salesman with no license. And so, I had a couple of buddies there that were federal cops, policemen. And so one of them came to me one night. We were in Hojo's, Howard Johnson, which was in Crystal City. We used to go in there. I can't remember now whether it was Tuesday or Thursday night, but everybody from the airport was over there. And they knew I hung out there because I did made a lot of sales there. And so they came in and they told me that, I never forget, the first officer came in and he asked me, if you could speak to me in the men's room. I said, speak to me in the men's room, Father, you know? We can talk. He said, come on, let's go in the men's room. So I went there with him, and he told me that somebody had, said something about my sales. And so then his lieutenant came in afterwards, and he said, come in the bathroom, and he told me. And that thing, like, worried me to death. And so, anyway, that's how I ended up in here. I went to a rehab this was about Thanksgiving when they told me that. So my drinking actually increased during that period, you know, because I was scared, you know. We alcoholics know about fear. And so I was afraid I was going to go to jail, lose my job and everything. So anyway, that started at the beginning. I probably took my first drink when I was around 11 or 12 years old. I lived in the Denby area of Newport News. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with that area over there, but this was in the late 50s or early 60s, and I'm 76 years old now, so, you know, I was probably in the sixth or seventh grade. I can't remember good, but there was a black guy and a white guy, and they were just like this, but they were bones, you know. And they hung out, you see one, you see the other, but they were winos, you know. And there's a street over there, still there, it's called Scufflefield. It leads right back down to one of those little outlet rivers, little streams off of the James River Bridge. But anyway, and they would make a fire by the road, and I could see them, you know, from my kitchen. I look forward to that fire out there beside the road, you know, because I knew it was my two buddies, you know. And they were out there drinking wine and eating Vienna sausages and pottage meat. And I go out there and have some hors d'oeuvres and some wine with my friends. So anyway, and they wouldn't, you know, being winos, they wouldn't give me too much because more for them and so, but they would give me a little bit. And I, you know, in my drinking career, the only beverage or alcohol that I liked was really wine. I drank anything that was proof, but I preferred wine. And so, anyway, that was my first knowledge of, first recollection of really liking to drink. And so I heard a whole lot of alcoholics say that it gave them a feeling of belonging or the fear factor and all that was going on. I was a kid, so I really don't know what it did for me, you know. I was already crazy, you know, and so, but it did. It started my drinking career, and then I started I started working as a caddy at the James River Country Club, which is a, you know, big time country club over off of right below Christopher Newport College, because Christopher Newport College wasn't there when I was caddying there. I used to gamble when I was a kid, and that's what we did at the golf course. And so one day I took a nickel and won about $40, and that was at like 63. That was a lot of money in the 60s. That was probably more than my dad made a week, you know. But I didn't know whoever won the money bought the whiskey. And so they took me to the whiskey store, and all these grown men, and they were my buddies, because all of us caddied together and gambled together all the time. So anyway, they took me to the whiskey store, and I wasn't used to, I don't know if I'd ever drank any whiskey before. And they had this guy, Sammy Lewis, he had one arm, somebody had shot his arm off and he had that nub. And, but you wouldn't know he had one arm, because he could play golf, anyway, when they took me to the whiskey store, and I never drank a whiskey before, and I said, I don't want that mess, I don't. And he took that nub, and I was in the back seat, and he put that nub up under my throat, and he pushed my head back, and he poured the whiskey down my throat. Uh-huh. And he held that nub up under there. You know, a lot of us say nobody pour whiskey down your throat. They just lying. He did. Anyway. He held that thing up on the back, you know, he had that nub, you know, and he was a grown man and I was a kid, you know, so, you know, he held that nub up under my arm until, you know, and about a minute and a half, something like that, I can't remember exactly, but I told him after that whiskey hit me, I said, Sam, you can let me go now, baby, because that whiskey had taken effect. Anyway, and I was off to the races after that. Like I said, I went in that rehab on Christmas Day, but I was an alcoholic. But the beauty in this was, and a lot of people, we talk about spiritual experiences in here, and some of them are the educational variety. But while I was in the rehab, I had a spiritual awakening. I really did. I opened up the blinds one night about 2:30. And I don't know why I woke up every about 2:30, but I did. And when I opened the blinds, a feeling came over me that I wish I could express. But I knew then that I was through with alcohol. And they never did issue the warrant. I came out of the rehab, and I was telling somebody earlier, they gave me recommendations for treatment. A lot of people, and I tell a lot of people this, alcoholics, meetings are treatment. And then when you learn that's treatment, then you learn how to treat yourself with the 12 steps. But this is treatment. And so, and I took a survey during my first 90 days, because I went to three meetings. I worked the evening shift at National Airport, and I went to a meeting at about 7 or 8 in the morning. I went to one at 12. I went to work at 3. I got off at 11, and I went to a meeting at 12 o'clock. Okay. And I took a survey. If those people who had 5 or 6 or 12, 15 years who had had a slip, I caught them at the door when they were getting ready to leave, and I wanted to know what happened. And this was every day, and that's the metropolitan area, you know. And it was like our book said, were people who would not normally mix. So it was blacks, white, Indians, Mexicans. It was people from all different walks of life, heterosexual, homosexuals, everywhere, you know. And I caught them at the door. But the one thing that they all had in common was they stopped going to meetings. They really did. And so it was instilled in me to go to meetings, you know, because I did not want to drink anymore. And so working for the airlines, I moved down here in 81 or 82. And I never said this in a meeting before, but I still gamble. I think I lost a couple hundred a day. But anyway, it didn't hurt me, you know. We know about pain as long until it start hurting you. We ain't gonna make no changes. But anyway, I never said this in a meeting before. I moved down here in 82. Was working at Norfolk International, and I met a young lady, and I wasn't married at the time, and of course, I moved in with an older brother of mine because I came down on a crusade. He and I used to hang out together and drink together when we were younger, and I wanted him to have what I had. I wanted him to sober up, and so I moved down here. Crusading, you know, and my feelings hurt too, you know. So I tell people to leave the crusading to the crusader, mm-hmm. you know. In other words, let the promotion be, let the attraction be the promoter. And so I don't do that anymore. But anyway, the young lady was at my house. I never forget it. One night, and she was frying chicken wings. And a knock came on the door. And I was in the shower. So I put on my house rope and I went to the door and this guy ran by me. And he grabbed a young lady. And I was like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I didn't know he was her ex-boyfriend who had just gotten out of the penitentiary.
Okay.
And so I told him he had to leave. I said, you don't respect the house, you don't respect me, you got to get the hell out of here. Oops, I'm sorry. But anyway. And he told me he'd be back. And I says, okay. So I went in, and I used to keep guns, money, and drugs in my golf bag. And so the guns were still in there. No drugs in there. The guns were still in there. So I went in there and I loaded them up. And sure enough, he came back with about 12 buddies. And I knew a few of them because I grew up here. And they were drug dealers and all of that mess. And so one of them recognized me, and he said, oh God, fellas. And I had both of them guns, and I had them out. You know, I won't point them at nobody, but I had them out, and I was going to use them. And one of the guys said, oh no, he will shoot you. I really will, if you don't get off this property. So anyway, I moved from here, and I was going to meetings at the Rebos Club and all of the local, but anyway, I moved from here to Buffalo, New York. And I went to meetings there. I have not failed every city I've gone in. I go to meetings. But, you know, lifestyle, this program is about change. And so, not drinking is but, I think there's a portion, I know there's a portion in our book that says, is drinking, not drinking enough for you? And it is not. It really isn't. I had an old buddy, I don't know if Steve remembers him, Babe used to say, if a man is a drunken horse thief and he stops drinking, he'll still steal your horse. So this program really is about change. And so, I skipped a portion. I married my high school sweetheart. And of course, in all of that confusion and me being, you know, I left here, I was working at the shipyard making something like, this is like in this early 70s, I'm making something like $2.40 an hour. And I get a job with the airline and I'm making three times that and some change. You know, and so, and she didn't go up there with me. And by the time she got up there with me, my alcoholism was in full bloom then. I'm 20, 21 years old. My alcoholism is in full bloom. So by the time she got up there, and I thought I was God's gift to them women. You know, it was D.C. is full of good-looking women. And I thought I was, you know, I had a pocket full of money. I bought a brand new car. Oh, my goodness. I couldn't even stand myself. But anyway, by the time my wife got up there, I had an affair going, you know, and so we got a divorce. And of course, and I say this because I know it to be fact, when I got a divorce, my alcoholism, it accelerated because of the thoughts. And I felt like I was a cold-blooded loser. And to me, that's how divorce feels. Whether, even if you're not in love, it was a commitment. And, but I was in love, and so I really drank, and I drank. And I used to want to be a professional fighter. I really did. And so, when we were teenagers down at that golf course, we used to really, there were some guys down there that were a little older, but they knew how to fight. And I used to get in it with them, and they was like, I don't believe you, you know. And so I was pretty good with my hands. And it got me in a lot of trouble up in the D.C. area. I had a couple of warrants out for banging up people, you know. And this program, when I came into the program, it really changed my whole perspective on life. As a matter of fact, and I don't think I've ever said this during a meeting, and I speak right regular. My wife and I, she was a flight attendant for Eastern Airlines. I don't know, a lot of you remember Eastern Airlines. They went out of business back in the 80s, I think. Anyway, and she came into the program. Well, she flew into D.C. She was working out of New York. She flew into D.C., and I was in the program, but I had not told her. And we were divorced, and so, you know, that was nothing. But she, you know, we always kept in touch because I knew her parents, and I really thought the world of them. But anyway, she came in, and she's in the program now. You know, I break my wife's anonymity, and she breaks mine, so there's no big deal. Anyway, she came into town, and of course, me being a pharmaceutical salesman, I still knew all of the wholesale fellas. So she came in town, I'll never forget it, and she says, where can I get some smoke at? I said, oh, that's all you want? I said, I got a partner live around the corner here. So I took her around there, and he knew it too, because we, you know, but anyway. And so I got her all smoked up, you know. And then she says, where are we going there? And I took her to an AA meeting. Oh my God. And she's in there with all cross-eyed and carrying on, and I was looking at her, I was like, yeah. But, you know, I say this, I love this program. I really do. And this program changed. I went from almost getting fired on that job to supervisor. I get a pension from there now, a decent pension. Then I came back here, and I was playing poker one night. And all the guys were drinking and carrying on at a friend of Val's house, you know. And the sheriff came in, and he said, Eli, he called me Eli. Eli, what are you doing there? I said, absolutely nothing. He says, I need some deputies. If you can pass all of the written and the physical. And I was 59 years old. And so at 59, I became a deputy sheriff. And the thing about this, which is amazing, being a deputy, okay, and I was in the jail, in the Hampton jail, and I knew some of the inmates. I knew they dead. It's one of them's dead. He got shot with me when we were like in our 20s. Okay. Yeah. And it was like, I had some nephews in there. And I'm like, but then there were some guys coming in there who were addicted to alcohol and drugs who were my age that I knew, that I used to hang out with. And you're 61, 62 years old, and you're in the, oh my God. And so what I used to do basically is when I walked to jail, and I knew most of them, some of them on a first name basis, I knew their mamas. One of them tried to threaten me one time, I'll never forget it. And so I said, come here, boy. And he came up, and he was all muscular, because they lift them pails and stuff, you know, they build their muscles up, and they come, you know. And I said, come here, let me see what you, and I looked at his last name. I said, and I'll never forget it. I told him, I said, when you go home, you tell Ruth that you met Elijah. He said, I says, when you make a phone call, you tell her you met me. I said, so when you come to this bars in the morning, I want to hear that story. So he called his mother that night. And when I came to the bars the next morning, she said, you're supposed to be in here with us. I said, I am. But I'm leaving this evening. But, you know, and I do. I said this the last time I spoke, and I meant it. I love this program. This program has changed not only the quality of my life, but the quality of a lot of other people's lives. And so, I'll give you an example. When I was living in Buffalo, I spoke at a convention, but it was military guys there. And so, at that time, I still wasn't married now. I got to keep, you know. Anyway, so I'm dating a girl down in New Orleans. She's come, she told me to meet her in Manhattan. So I fly, I think I told Mike this the other night. So I fly from Buffalo to Manhattan. She comes up and she's up to buy a mink coat. And so anyway, I get off the subway and this guy, he's walking at me and he's looking and I said, and I step around and I said, oh, I'm getting ready to go back to jail again. Because I ain't going to mess around with him. I'm going to take him out real quick. And he starts smiling. He said to me, I never forget it. This is why this program is so precious to me. He said, Elijah. And I said, I know who I am. Who are you? He said, you saved my life. And I said, what? He said, you spoke in Buffalo. And I hugged him and I says, well, if you heard my story, you know I'm violent. I ain't forgot how to be violent. I said, I didn't know who you. I said, if I speak, you know, there's few people here, but if you speak in a comp, you know, it's a lot of people. How am I going? And I said, I don't know. He says, doesn't matter. You saved my life. And I went, wow. You know, and so those are some of the, I was telling Mike, these are some of the benefits of the program. Money couldn't pay how I felt. I'm serious. And those are some of the benefits of you know, this program. And I've had several occasions like that where people, you know, have said, Elijah, you really? And so, and I tell most of the guys that I sponsor, I said, people are watching you. People are literally watching you. And one guy came back and he says, Elijah, my neighbor told me that I've really changed. I said, you've been watching you all the time, stumbling and bumbling. and you know, we think nobody, you know, but people are observing you even now. They know, you know, and so I thank God for this program. I go to meetings regularly, all the time, you know. I used to keep drugs, guns, and money in that golf bag. Well, I play golf now. Nothing in there but balls and none of that other crap in that golf bag, you know. And it's all to this program. I retired from that airline. I worked 5.5 years with the sheriff's department. I get a pension from there. And so I'm really kind of, you know, if I was in a gambling situation, I'd say I'm dumb and lucky. That's hard to be. and so I don't think of that. I really don't think that I'm smart enough to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I think and I know this is a God-given program because as intelligent as I am, I would have never ended up here. That maneuver to try to stay out of jail, and they, by the way, they did not issue those warrants. that was a maneuver, but it was me thinking I'm so smart, but it was a maneuver. I think it was just the action that God had prepared for me for this moment, or moments like this. I'm serious. And so I really don't give myself no credit. I don't. And listen to this, I'm an alcoholic, so I would like to. But I realized that it was a maneuver, a manipulation. But it was God's way of bringing me into Alcoholics Anonymous. It really was. And so, you know, I hear a whole lot of people who, I did this, I did this, I did that. I don't, you know, if I had done it my way, I would be dead. Because most of my buddies are dead. I was telling one the other day, one of my few buddies called me the other day from D.C. and he says, all these guys up here, man, are gone. And I said, you know, guys in here are gone. Guys in Philly, the guys in New York that I knew, that's the lifestyle. And here I am, you know. A woman told me today, she says, you're 76, you look really good, you know. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah. and so I don't, God, this is a God-given program. It really is. And to think, I'm saying that from today, but I used to give myself credit. I thought, and so this program is progressive. The longer you stay around, the more will be revealed to you. And so we got a whole lot of old stupid sayings in here that are so real. That it is pathetic. Give time, time. And when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And you'd be surprised in here who will inform you of something in you. And maybe, listen to this, maybe you heard it 1,000 times. But it wasn't time for understanding to come to it. That has happened to me in here. And I go, wow. And so, I think that this program is, I said this to somebody the other day, I don't think two alcoholics, I don't care how intelligent they are, could have come up with this program. So I give God the credit for using Bob and Bill and those guys from the Oxford group and so forth. But I give God the credit. I really do. Mm-hmm. And one of the hardest parts for me was I was brought up basically Christian, but I had a blindfold on God. So that explains my activities. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I was brought up Christian, and so one of the most devastating happenings in me being in meetings was one of our friends, Steve, over at Battlefield. He said, there was a girl in there who was an avowed Christian, and she kept saying, when she shared, she said, giving honor to my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And so after the meeting, we gathered, like we were out front talking and sharing, and he says, I'm getting so tired of that Jesus Christ. And I went, wow. And that thing hurt me, and he was a real good friend of mine. And it just played on my head, and it played on my head until in my meditation, which is a change for an alcoholic, prayer and meditation. So in my meditation, it was like God himself, the God of my understanding, spoke to me. And what he said was, Elijah, I don't need you boxing for me with them little bitty arms. And I was all right with what he said. And so I said that to say this, it is the God of your understanding, not mine. And I've learned to respect that. That was one of the biggest changes in my program. Because we come in here and we got a whole lot of prejudices. Most of us are in denial about them, but that was a part of my character defects. All of the areas that I had these petty prejudices in, I had to work on. This is the fourth month, and so most of the groups that I go to, we had the four step. And people don't realize, and I said this to some guys the other day, guys and girls, ladies, if you do a four step and you are not as honest or as thorough as you can be, then you'll be working for the rest of your life. And that's all of us. That's part of the process. But be as thorough as possible when you do it. And even now, I was telling some people the other day, the thing that I work on most of all is pride and ego. I was telling them, I was with my accountant the other day, and I was sharing a story with him, and I exaggerated. And my old sponsors used to say, any exaggeration is a lie. And immediately when I was sharing, and the reason I exaggerated was ego. I'm trying to make him think that I'm more than what I am. And so in here, I can be cold-blooded honest. And I don't have to pretend to be something that I'm not. I can be Elijah, a real alcoholic who wants to get better, who've embraced the process, and am willing to work on it one day at a time. And that is the beauty in this program to me. It's one old lady, I never forget when I was doing that 99, I was sitting down there, where, you know, right down front, and I was listening to her, and I think she had something like 27 years. And if you knew, nobody got that kind of time, nobody to go out drinking for, you know, and most of us thought like that when we came in. Nobody, you know, they drinking. And she told me, I'll never forget it, she looked at me just like I'm, and she said, and my mouth must have flew up when she said she had 27 years. She said, close your mouth, boy. She said, it's one day at a time. Embrace that. And that's what I did. It's one day at a time. I was 31, 32 years old then. I'm 76 years old now. And she said, if you do this one day at a time, the days will become weeks, the weeks will become months, and you will become an old man in Alcoholics Anonymous. I ain't quite an old man yet. And that's ego. Y'all, it's been a plum pleasing pleasure, and I thank you all for coming out to listen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elijah. That was a very good story. We got some time, so I'm going to call.